Hello and welcome to the JMRA podcast. I am your host, Joe Montana's right arm, as we review Championship Sunday. My apologies for not doing this sooner. You know, I'm not making excuses, but I'm going to tell you what happened. This is how I knew the Patriots were not going to win on Sunday. I picked the Patriots, if you listened to the previous podcast. I picked them to beat Denver, picked Carolina to beat Arizona, whatever. So, you know how, you like, every once in a while you wake up and you know it's not going to be your day, all right? So I was already missing the game because I had to work, and we got over a foot of snow, and the other area I worked in got 2 feet of snow, so they decided to still have work open. So I had to go there and miss, really, essentially, the first 2.5 quarters of the AFC title game. So I had to go back and watch it after the fact, and which we'll get to in a second, of course. But this was all preceded by the fact that I woke up on Sunday morning and somehow broke my tooth eating a Pop-Tart. Now, I assume at some point, Saturday, living in New Jersey, we got a boatload of snow. On Saturday, I'm sitting around the house all day. You're eating and you're watching TV, and there's really not a lot you can do. And I think maybe at some point, maybe if I had a potato chip, a piece of popcorn or something, I damaged my tooth. I don't remember that happening. But the next day when I got up and ate a Pop-Tart, and it literally, I heard the snap when I bit into the Pop-Tart. The Pop-Tart was soft. It was an unfrosted strawberry, which are still very good, by the way. And it just broke. And then 10 minutes later, okay, I go to put clothes in the dryer, and my dryer stops working. Like, it's not even turning on. And it was at that moment, I think I said to somebody, I think I said to my mom, I said, if this is an indication of how the day is going to go, the Patriots are going to lose by 500 points. But instead of losing by 500 points, what the Patriots did may have been worse, which we'll get to in a second. But anyhow, the social media rundown, you can check us out on Twitter at Joe M's Right Arm. The blog, JoeMontanasRightArm.com. I'm really trying to crank out stuff here on a daily basis. So it's been a good time and a busy time the last couple of weeks, in particular on the blog with the NFL playoffs. Please, if you get an opportunity, I wrote a piece on the 2015 Carolina Panthers and some concerns I have about the Panthers moving forward. This has very little to do with the actual X's and O's of Super Bowl 50, but there's some esoteric issues coming up as it relates to the game that I think are very interesting. That over the span of 2 weeks, pregame and then post, I'm very interested to see how it's dealt with by the media types out there. But if you get a chance, check it out. I think it's a realistic read on what's to come here for the Panthers in the next week plus as they get ready for Super Bowl 50 against the Denver Broncos. So you can check us out, obviously, on the blog at JoeMontanasRightArm.com. Also on Vine. Unfortunately, my Vine game slipped a little bit on Sunday because I was really into the Patriots-Broncos game when I was able to get in front of a TV, so I wasn't too much worried about Vining and all that stuff. I would recommend, though, if you want to see the throw of the year, non-Aaron Rodgers division, I may have placed it on Vine. It was that 4th-and-10 throw by Brady. Jesus. That, first of all, to throw what essentially is a season pass, a season-ending pass potentially, I guess it was about a 30, 40-yard throw downfield, double coverage to your best receiver. That takes A, balls, and B, that takes extreme touch to hit him the way that he did. Unfortunately for the Patriots, they weren't able to really finish things out. It's a shame if you're a Patriots fan, man. Geez. You know, you won the Super Bowl last year, so I think that takes some of the sting away. But damn, they had it. They had that game. Because had they scored there on the two-point play, which we'll talk about in a few moments, you wonder how Denver would have been able to operate in overtime. Their offense in the second half was not good. And, you know, Look, I don't want to spend a whole lot of time talking about the Brady versus Manning thing because I don't think that is anywhere near the storyline of Sunday's game. But I don't want to hear it from the Peyton Manning folks. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to, this is a defeat of Tom Brady, blah, blah, blah. Add another one to the ledger for Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning was a bystander on Sunday from this standpoint. He had one good drive, okay? The other touchdown he got was put to him on a silver platter by Brady on that interception of Von Miller. And, you know, he didn't do anything the rest of the way. He led a drive or two that ended up in a field goal. But, geez, I mean, you can't – it just is nauseating. People want so badly to call this guy the greatest ever. I've never seen anything like it. They want to do it so badly, but they know they can't. They know they can't do it. So any little kernel or morsel that they can grab and cling on to, they do. It is absurd. Absurd. Anyhow, enough of that talk because, again, I said it was dead a year ago, and I still think it is. That argument is in the books for Mr. Brady. But let's get to the game here. And, of course, the Patriots falling to the Broncos 20-18. Congratulations to the Broncos. They deserve to win that game. That defensive effort was one of the best defensive efforts that you'll see in a playoff game by a front four, by a front seven. And then one of the things that's getting lost in that game is that the Denver secondary I thought was very good too. You saw some overhead shots shown by CBS where it was pretty clear Brady didn't have anybody to throw to. And this is with the full complement of players. Now, it was pretty evident, you know, Danny Amendola was not healthy. Rob Gronkowski obviously was somewhat compromised by the thin air in Denver for whatever reason versus the first time he played him. And Edelman really wasn't a huge factor in the game until really the fourth quarter. The Denver secondary, I thought, did a great job. They really did, and they didn't give up a lot of the dink and dunk stuff that you typically see. They basically eliminated Brandon LaFell from the game. Keyshawn Martin, you know, Brady targeted James White 16 times, only completed 5 passes to him. So Denver's defense was just out of this world. A fantastic job. And it goes back to the Peyton Manning point I just made a second ago. Man, how much pressure is it from the Denver side of this defensively to hold off the Patriots without getting a real complimentary performance from the offense? You got the 2 touchdowns early on. One of them was set up easily by the defense, so there wasn't too much Peyton Manning had to do there, but they had all of that pressure on them down the stretch in the third quarter and then, of course, in the fourth quarter. And I think that's where we're going to start. So the Patriots have the ball 3 times in Denver territory in the final 6.5, 7 minutes of the game. And there's been a lot of talk on what Bill Belichick should have done on those possessions. Now, 20-12 heading in on the first 2 possessions that died in Denver territory. So the first one is that 4th-and-1 play they run where it's a play action and then they run Edelman across the line to try to sneak him out in the flat to get open. There is too much pressure off the edge. Brady ends up lobbing a pass to Edelman and he gets stopped short. I did not have a problem with that. There's 6 minutes left to go in the game. I think if you kick a, there's no guarantee, and this is the problem I think, you know, from a couple of sides of that argument. If you kick the field goal, if you're going to kick it, I think you have to kick it there with 6 minutes left. I don't think you can kick it with 2:20 left. That, to me, was the call. Now, if it's 4th-and-1, what are you going to do, man? I think you got to go for it. I didn't really have a problem with what he did. If you're going to pick a spot where maybe he could go for the field goal, it was that second series where they have a 4th-and-6 and they don't get it. Maybe you kick a field goal there. But again, you know, you're flipping field position. At that point in the field, they're right around the 10-15-yard line. If you hold Denver in place offensively, you get the ball back in a good spot, and that's what happened. And then eventually they get the ball, and they score the touchdown and fail on the 2-point play. But I think in that series, I don't think there was a right time to go for the field goal. I think if you were going to do it, you had to do it the first time. but you're facing fourth and one. I just don't – now, they couldn't – I don't think the sneaks with Brady would have worked. There was a little bit of a long yard to go. I don't think he would have gotten it. That would have been tough to do. So I think Belichick made the right call, because you can't run the risk with 2 minutes left of kicking a field goal. And then who knows what happens with the kickoff? You just don't know. You can't be sure. And who's to say Denver doesn't act a little differently on a kickoff versus what happens there on the other side of it when you get the ball back on down? So I didn't have a problem with what Belichick did in that situation there. If the Patriots erred somewhere, I think the play calling was a little weird. I didn't like the fourth and one call. I always hate play actions on fourth and one that are like misdirection plays. Denver's defense is fast. So the only way to me that you can get by a fast defense is misdirection or going straight ahead at them and try to power them. Now, they tried the misdirection there, but it was the timing was already off, because that offensive line of the Patriots was horrifying. And that, to me, is the whole game. You know, the Von Miller pick was a huge play. I think that may have been the biggest play of the game, if you exclude that two-point stop at the end. But, man, how in the blue hell did the Patriots put out an offensive line performance that poorly? You know, Pro Football Focus did, they have their offensive line rankings. The Patriots were near the bottom of the league in pass blocking via their ratings. They were 31st in the league, and it showed up on Sunday. They were terrible pass blocking for Tom Brady, and, you know, that's the whole game. Now, I think from the Patriots side, a few things to keep stock of here heading into next season. Number one, obviously the health of the offensive line. Some of that stuff is fluky. The Patriots were they were the most injured team in the NFL this season. So a part of that is the whole injury luck issue and being able to prevent that. You can't really, but you have to hope if you're the Patriots that your team holds it together better. And I think the other thing, too, is that you take away from it from the Patriots side. You know, Peyton Manning now, this is the third game he's played in since he's come back. He has not played one game on the road. And, you know, for the Patriots to kind of be laissez-faire with home field advantage and really going with health over home field advantage, I think it came back to haunt him. And I'll tell you another thing, too. The one play in my mind, people keep pointing to the Miami game. If you listen to Boston Sports Talk Radio about, man, we blew the Miami game, that team stunk, how did we lose to that team, et cetera, et cetera. Remember, the New England Patriots were leading the Philadelphia Eagles 14-0 the week after that Denver game at home, and then Belichick called for that drop kick with, I believe it was Nate Ebner. If he doesn't do that, oh, who knows what we'd be talking about right now? Who knows? It is amazing that that's the case. Another amazing point, too, this shows you what a thin line it is between winning and losing in the NFL. The Bengals. The Bengals, that nonsense that the Bengals put out there on Wild Card Weekend impacted the AFC playoffs more than anything else. They injured arguably the best offensive football player in the league this year, who is not named Cam Newton, and Antonio Brown. Roethlisberger has his shoulder injured, so he's not 100% going into the Denver game. So that really changed things a great deal to me. You know, if you're the Patriots, this is an opportunity missed, because I still don't think man for man, player for player, the Broncos are a better team than the Patriots. But on Sunday, they were better coached. They played harder, they played quicker, and they won the game 20-18. Von Miller had an out-of-this-world performance. You have to credit him 2.5 sacks and an interception. He was fantastic. The Broncos are a little silly with some of the celebrating they do. You know, people want to get on Cam Newton about his celebrating. Von Miller's out there grabbing his crotch on national television in front of millions of people. Anybody complain? Are we writing articles on that? No. We're not. We're talking about Cam Newton dabbing. But it's okay for Von Miller to grab his junk. I mean, that's a joke to me. And then there's a quote in a Peter King story. I believe it was Peter King. It's coming from the MMQB website, where an unnamed Broncos player said that when they sacked Brady, they wanted to rub their crotch in his face. Like, this is why the whole Cam Newton argument to me is foolish. But that's another story for another day. The Broncos, I'm not the biggest fan of theirs as far as how they conduct themselves, but whatever. They won 20-18. You got to give them a lot of credit for being able to persevere. And if you're the Patriots, I think a lot has to be taken stock of as far as what's going to happen from here on out with the team heading into next season. A lot of changes, I think, need to be made to that offensive line. Well, maybe not a lot of changes, but enough to where you can't have Brady getting killed there. And, of course, they fired their offensive line coach the following day after the game. Somebody was going to pay for that performance. And unfortunately for the Patriots, they have to change up matters on the coaching staff. From the New England side, defensively, they held the Broncos to 99 yards rushing, which I thought was key, 3.3 yards per carry. Really limited them. I thought they did a great job. Outside of that two-touchdown flurry that they allowed, they were pretty good. They weren't as good as Denver's defense, but man, because they didn't have the opportunities really because of the number of passes Brady threw versus the number of passes that Manning threw. Okay, let's get to this two-point play here. So, the Patriots go for two after getting the touchdown to Gronk after that great Brady throw, and then they come back on fourth down to score a touchdown. And then you get the two-point play where Brady is pressured somewhat, rolls out to his right, and then tries to throw across his body to Edelman. If you go back and look at the replay, it looks like Rob Gronkowski had his man beat by a step, so if Brady lobs that ball into the corner or in that general vicinity, he probably could have hit Gronkowski for two. That was according to, I guess, Tim Hasselbeck, that was the second read on the play for Brady to throw to Gronk because the primary receiver was Edelman. This is the thing I think with Brady, okay? I think Brady is like a heavyweight fighter, you know? You keep punching him, and if the fight goes 15 rounds, by the 15th round, he's punch drunk. And some of those decisions that he makes so effectively in that part of the field, after all of these hits, you get some weird things that happen. And I think that certainly was the case there on that two-point play. They're going to have a long time to think about that one in the New England area. Hey, some weird numbers about Peyton Manning for you Peyton Manning lovers out there, you junkies who can't get enough of old 18. How about this? And I'll tell you what. He gets dogged a lot for his playoff record, which is, I believe, now back at 500 as a result of the win. He's at 13-13 now. Peyton Manning is 4-1 in AFC Championship games. And as much as we dog him over the years for not being clutch, this is kind of the LeBron James thing, too. The guy has success, but we still dog him for not getting it done in certain venues. Manning has won four straight AFC title games. Three of those have come against the Patriots. He's won his last three games in the postseason against the Patriots. Now, granted, they've only played five times, but he's won his last three games against the Patriots. 06 AFC title game, 13 AFC title game, 15 AFC title game. Not bad. Not bad at all. You got to give the guy credit when credit's due. He didn't make any mistakes. He got it done. I'm not the biggest Manning supporter, but hey, good for him that he got back there. He went through a lot of nonsense to get back there, and now he's going to have a chance to win ring number two. But in order to do that, he's going to have to deal with Cam Newton and the Carolina Panthers. They destroyed Arizona 49-15. Couple of takes on this game. Obviously, this one was over before it started. I don't know if we're going to know the deal on Carson Palmer, but it's pretty evident something is up. The guy turned the ball over six times. Now, we talked about this last week on the podcast, what Carson Palmer we would see. Would we see Arizona Carson Palmer, or would we see Cincinnati Carson Palmer? And we got the answer emphatically. It was Cincinnati Carson that showed up. Six turnovers, four interceptions. Just a mess. And when you're on the road in those type of games, talking about it with the Brady picks, you know, you can't make those mistakes on the road. You can't. Because those teams at home, especially if they're, you know, a better team, they're going to feed off of that and they're going to make you pay for it. And that's what the Panthers did. Cam Newton, 335 yards passing, two touchdowns, also had two rushing touchdowns as well. Seven different players caught passes, which could very well be critical for the Panthers moving forward in the Super Bowl. They have the ability to put a lot of different bodies out there to try to make things happen, and they've been able to do it on the season here now, 17-1 on the year. They've become just the third team in NFL history to carry a 15-1 regular season mark into the Super Bowl. Carolina also rushed for over 150 yards on the day, successful there. And again, defensively with Carolina, I think there's some concern about their secondary outside of Josh Norman. But again, they got it done, slowing down that Arizona passing attack, which, you know, at one time looked like it was the best in the league. But Arizona not able to generate a lot in terms of the passing game. Carolina doing their jobs. And now it sets up. And, you know, it's crazy. There's so much to talk about with that New England-Denver game. This Carolina-Arizona game was over really almost immediately. The Panthers jumped out to another strong start, 24-7 at halftime. And then really went to work from there. The only weird thing about this game was the Panthers going for two up 40-15. I didn't get that. That was kind of weird. But nonetheless, they did it. They got it. And then away they go from there to make it 49-15. And with that, we turn the page to Super Bowl 50. It's going to be Carolina against Denver. Denver making their eighth appearance in the Super Bowl. Meanwhile, Carolina just the second. By the way, dumbest story maybe of the 2 weeks here for the Super Bowl. The Broncos have decided that they're going to wear their white jerseys. They're the designated home team for the Super Bowl this year, since it's the AFC's turn to play home team. That is one of the craziest things I've ever heard. So Elway, John Elway, that is, who is the team president, also the executive vice president of football operations, said that they've had some success in their white jerseys, so they want to wear their white jerseys. So they won Super Bowl 33 in their current white jerseys. All right. They lost another Super Bowl in their white jerseys, which were different white jerseys that they played in the Super Bowl 21 against the Giants at Elway quarterbacked in. They don't want to wear the orange jerseys. That's the big thing with all this. They don't want to wear the orange jerseys. That's what they wore when they lost the Super Bowl in 2013, 43-8. They lost 55-10 to the 49ers back in 89 in the orange jerseys. They lost 42-10 to the Redskins in the orange jerseys. So, and they got killed by the Cowboys in 77 in Super Bowl number 12, actually to end the 77 season in 78. They lost 27-10. So I get it. Okay, there's a history there with the orange jersey. How about this? How about your team playing against some of the greatest teams ever? How about that? I mean, that's a more legitimate excuse, I think, rather than the actual jerseys. Who cares about what jersey you're wearing? But that's the thing with the Broncos. They want to wear their white jersey. So that's going to be, I'm sure, talked about at some point during the week as we go through the lead-up here for the Super Bowl. But a couple of quick thoughts. We'll have a Super Bowl preview next week on the podcast to talk about the game. A couple of small items in this contest. I think if you're a Broncos or Panthers fan, you need to think long and hard about going in to Super Bowl 50. Number one, if you're Denver, how do you score? You would have to think, okay, now we've seen some low-scoring Super Bowls. The two giant Patriots Super Bowls were relatively low-scoring. But, man, I think it's asking a lot to play offense the way Denver's been playing offense as of late. They're going to have to find a way to move the football with Manning's arm. They're going to have to, because I don't think Carolina's run defense is going to be able to be penetrated by Denver. So I think that's going to be tough. And then you're going to have to throw the football. From Carolina's side, I think, too, not necessarily how do you score the football, how are you going to move it? Because clearly going into the game, you know the Broncos defense is going to say, okay, Greg Olsen, we're going to try to take him away and do that. If the Panthers are granted the ability by the Broncos to get a cushion, we've seen in the past the Broncos might play off a little bit in coverage. If they do, that might be a terrible idea from their side of it because of the quickness of Carolina. I just don't know if those receivers are good enough to beat some of the secondary players of the Broncos. Chris Harris Jr., if he's healthy, very tough corner, one of the top corners in the league. Aqib Talib, one of the top corners in the league. What is Carolina going to do to be able to throw the football and run it as well? Denver's run defense last week was no joke. The Patriots almost didn't even bother to run the football. So I think those are some of the questions heading into this game from both sides of it. I get the line. I understand it. The Panthers are anywhere between a 4 to 5 point favorite to win the game. I get that. You know, this game going in has some similar principles to the game in 2014 to end the 2013 season between the Broncos and the Seahawks. A lot of similar properties, and you wonder if Carolina is going to be able to have the same kind of success that Carolina did when they were in this spot against Denver a couple years ago. But I think, to me, it all goes back to the Denver offense. That, to me, is the key. If Denver can move the ball effectively, I think it's going to be a tough game for Carolina. I really do. But if we see the same Denver offense we've seen here in the AFC divisional round, in the AFC title game, I don't see how it gets done here against Carolina. I think it's going to be a very tough game. We'll talk about it in a few more details and meaning coming up next week as a part of the JMRA podcast. That will do it for this day's show. Of course, you can check us out on Twitter at JoeM's Right Arm, on the blog JoeMontanasRightArm.com. Also, you can find us on Tumblr, Facebook, and Vine, all that good stuff, by simply searching Joe Montana's Right Arm. That'll do it. Until next time, folks, happy football, everybody.